Welcome to the next episode of Flintco Talks. It's your boy Dano, live here in Austin in the Flintco Talks studio. And today I'm blessed with the presence of our Vice President of HSE, Health, Safety, and Environment, Mr. Steve Jordan. Steve, welcome to Flintco Talks.
Thanks, Dano. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you are here today, Steve. And, you know, we've been friends for probably 15 years, probably when we first met, working here in Austin together. And our lives from a safety perspective looked pretty different in 2008 than from what they look like today, right? You were maybe even in a different role when you started at Flintco than you are today. Can you tell us a little bit about what has changed over the last 15-ish years between when you first started at Flintco and now that you're the VP of HSE? What are the changes that you've seen and help implement?
Sure. So I think the easy thing to do is a lot of people go to technology and talk a lot about technology and those changes. And there have been substantial changes that have been very beneficial and impactful. However, I think the most important changes that we've seen has been in the attitude and behavior of people.
What do you think drives that attitude and behavior in people? And what's the changes that you've seen?
So some of the changes that I've seen is the true care and compassion for others. Now, when we hear about these types of things, we automatically think about, oh, let's give everybody hugs and pat them on the bottom and say, go get them, Tiger. And that's really not it. It's truly caring about for the people that work around you. They have families, friends, financial obligations, things that they like to do outside of work that their work supports. And I think that we've seen people really make a change from being maybe more selfish or self-centered to really looking globally at people in general, because it takes a lot of people to build the projects that we build. Mm-hmm. Not one person can do it.
Nope.
We have to take care of them collectively. And when we do that and the people know that we truly care about them, they are willing to offer a better product. They're willing to come back the next day. They have happy attitudes. The quality's better. And most importantly, they have a reason to work safely. And they do perform much better from a safety perspective.
What do you think has driven that change? What's changed from 2008, 2009 to today that's helped drive that care, that compassion? Because I see it. I see it in the day-to-day work at the job. I see it in the way that my direct reports, our office staff, superintendents, how they even care more. What's the driving factor behind all that?
I think there's multiple driving factors. I think times are changing. Mm-hmm. People's generations are changing. I also think that it's a change in leadership and leadership mentality. We often hear that things are driven from the top down. I really think that they are driven from the top down, but bottom up. And everybody in the middle is a huge key to that. And so something that we did as Flintco several years ago now, 2016, is we really took a deep look at our culture. Mm-hmm. And the question was asked, you know, is good enough? Are we doing good? And I think everybody around the table looked at that and said, we're doing good, but I think we can do better. Mm-hmm. And here's how we can probably do better. And so one of the things that we did is we engaged a company in Austin, Texas called JMJ and Associates, mm-hmm. where they came in and they really dissected our company. And we did several surveys, had interviews with individuals throughout the company, various roles, to get everybody's opinion on where are we as Flintco within our culture. We went into that knowing that when we got these results, there was going to have to be action taken afterwards. Mm-hmm. If you don't take action, it's just meaningless words being said and meaningless questions being asked. Well, our leadership received the information from the surveys and said, okay, now it's time to buckle your boots and let's get to work. And so we embarked on trying to I don't want to say completely change our culture, but uh-huh. It was an improve. We had a lot of culture that was good, but we could get better. So we decided to go about this in a manner where, hey, if we have to force you to do something, mm-hmm. you're most likely not going to do it. Or if you're going to do it, it's half-hearted. Mm-hmm. So how do we engage people to where they want to make the decisions to either work safe, look out for their friends on the job site, where they knew that they had a voice and they knew that that voice was going to be heard. And, you know, I kind of liken this to, and I haven't really watched the whole thing, but Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've watched it or not, mm-hmm. but in the beginning of Ted Lasso, he gets hired to come in to coach a soccer team, and he's a football coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Great. Well, one of the first things that he did was he asked the team, and the team didn't believe him, thought he was a joke. He said, "What are things that you think need to be changed? What are things that you want help with?" And so he put up, you know, the goofy suggestion box. Well, mm-hmm. one of the suggestions in there was the shower pressure was bad.
Oh, wow.
So what was interesting is he fixed the shower pressure. Well, what happened was is one of the players noticed the shower pressure had been changed. Well, that player started talking to the other players. And what happened very quickly is that the team said, "Our coach is listening to us."
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened within Flintco. Things started changing, and everybody in the company is like, "Hey, our leadership is listening to us. We're instigating and putting changes in place that we had something to do with. We're being heard." How brilliant is that to be able to truthfully and genuinely empower the people that work in your company? It shouldn't just be, again, from the top down or the bottom up. It's everybody. So we put together a plan of action and how we are going to help change, and by that is the mentality.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that are important to us? And instill those values and show people the true change that we wanted to put in place.
What have the results looked like? Have you had any pushback from people, or have you heard people whining and complaining, or has everybody been like, "Heck yeah, man, we're on board, JMJ, let's do it"?
It's not been that easy. wish it was. No, really, at first, JMJ told us, you might have some attrition from this. You might have some people that look at this and what you're trying to do and say, "Hey, sounds great, I'm out."
Mm-hmm.
And we had to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
We did have some people leave. Subsequently, we had some of those people try to come back, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that were talked about is, "Hey, this is all touchy-feely. Look, we're rough and tumble dudes. We've been in the industry for a long time. This isn't how this industry operates." Well, mm-hmm. we had to show them. You know, you can tell people everything you want to, but you had to show them how this works. And so the other pushback really came about when I think people, as we evolved our culture, thought it was a time of tolerance where we could tolerate unsafe behaviors. And look, this isn't just a safety thing. It's an overall, overarching behavior pattern with how we conduct ourselves with our owners, how we do our day-to-day tasks, how mm-hmm. we do the big things, the small things, and especially the things that when nobody is looking. And I think that people took this to heart.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw the benefits of it. So what we've seen substantial increases in safe work.
Mm-hmm.
Not because Joe, the superintendent, is coming to look, or, "Oh, the safety guy's here." None of that matters. They're choosing to work safe because they know and understand the benefits for them, their families, their loved ones, and how it impacts them, whether it be physically, emotionally, financially. And when you ask people out on the job site, "Hey, what's something that Flintco can do to improve?" And they say, they give you two or three suggestions. Well, you act on those suggestions. You do the Ted Lasso effect, and then they start becoming more and more open. Our goal is to make sure that everybody has a voice. We all hear the moniker, "You have the authority to stop unsafe work," that you have... that everybody's a safety person. You hear all these things, and that's great. And most of the time you hear it. Well, guess what? Here, we live it. Mm-hmm. We do it. Is it perfect? No. Substantially better. So we've seen a great reduction in incidents, property damages, near misses. And we've also seen one of the things that I think is really unique is we have a Friday safety call.
Mm-hmm.
And we also bring our trade partners in for those that want to do it. We don't make them do it. And since we started doing that, we've had just over 7,000 trade partner employees partake in our Friday safety call, where they can hear about things that have happened, good, bad, and ugly, on our job sites throughout the country. And those efforts are to help people learn from things that have happened in the past. If we can share that information through good, solid communication and genuine caring, the likelihood is much less that those things are going to be repeated. So our Friday safety call is one of the things that we did to really help share these lessons learned. Look, one of the things that we noticed is we were having a lot of hand injuries on our job sites, and specifically lacerations. And so we looked at multiple different things. It's super easy to go, hey, just wear a pair of gloves and you'll be fine.
Right.
And we did that, and I'll come back to that in a second.
Yeah.
But we talked about better workstations. We would have people that were cutting conduit or lumber or things of that nature, and using improper workstations that aided in people getting their hands cut. We really tried to change the environment in which they were working first. And then the last line of defense was to go to gloves. Now, oh my goodness, you're going to make us wear gloves and we can't feel this, and they're uncomfortable and they're hot and all this stuff. Well, years later, we don't hear any of that. Now it's become the norm. And what we've noticed is a substantial reduction in hand lacerations.
Mm.
And it is the norm on the Flint Co. job sites now. In fact, we rarely have to say, look, you got to have gloves on our job sites. Most of our trade partners now are choosing to use them on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And when you choose to do something yourself, you're more likely to buy in. You're more likely to utilize those things that are better for you.
I would agree 110%, right? Anytime somebody comes in and says, this is the mandate, you have to do it, they expect everybody to pick it up and say, okay, great, no problem, we'll do it, right? And it just doesn't happen that way, because that's not the way we've always done it, right? And that's everybody's... probably their first response is, oh my gosh, why would we have to wear gloves? Like, well, I've never had to wear gloves for the past X number of years. And, well, they only make them big and clunky, or it's only big leather gloves, you know, and now all of a sudden you've got guys that you can wear gloves and you can actually use your phone. You get a text message, you can click it and respond or whatever you need to do. I wanted to go back to some of the things that maybe JMJ made us, I don't want to say made us, suggested that we embrace, right? You talked about, people said this was going to be touchy-feely, right? How do you change the culture from hard-nosed superintendent, you got to go home because you're doing the wrong thing, to, hey, maybe I'm going to take the chance to educate you here on why what you're doing is maybe not the safest, and I'm still going to give you an opportunity to work here because you got to provide for your family. What are some of those things that JMJ suggested that we do to help improve that culture?
Right. So again, first it was a change in our mentality, and we had to show them. So we had to learn, when we saw instances on our job site where there was a safety concern, we had to take into account several things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is some of what JMJ taught us and things that we learned in-house is that worker doing that because they don't know, they don't care, they don't have the resources? We are seeing a trend in our industry with an unskilled workforce, with supervision that is probably not as qualified as they could be to manage that workforce. So we had to take those things into account and make determinations. And so what we did as Flint Co. is we said, okay, if it is a situation where there is lack of education and lack of resources with the trade partner, specifically trade partners, we're going to offer our help as much as we can. We're going to offer to provide them education, no cost to them. That's what one of the things that our HSE department is here for, is to help educate and provide not just awareness education, but truly give them solutions. So it opened up an avenue for us to really better take ownership, because for a long time, I think the mentality in our industry is, hey, those are just subs.
Mm-hmm.
They're just subs, whatever. Well, they're not. They're people. Mm-hmm. And those people build these wonderful creations that we're tasked with building. They're our partners. That's why we referred to them as trade partners, because without them, we don't get this done. So you have to first value the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's first and foremost. And then educate them. And so we do have, or have had, instances where people just don't care. And And that doesn't make them bad people. It just makes them people that don't qualify to work on our projects. So they'll need to go somewhere else, you know, with their company. We took that kind of mentality. And I will say also, I think for a time, and we're coming out of that now, is I think Flintco went a little overboard. Mm-hmm. I think we went with too much tolerance. And we used what JMJ taught us, and as we developed our Flintco for Life culture, as an opportunity to be tolerant. And I think we're finally starting to come on the downside of that, where it's not tolerance. It's we have to evaluate where these individuals are, provide them what they need to be successful, and if they still choose not to, hey, thanks, you're going to have to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about valuing people, right? And one of the changes that came with that was really this kind of this trade partner, from subcontractor to trade partner. And as a guy that's worked in the field, you know, and managed multiple trade partners, multiple projects, I think that's long overdue, right? Mm-hmm. Because you said, like, people just, oh, they're just subs, right? Oh, it's just a sub. And it even got that way with owners and even architects saying, oh, just get your sub to do it. Just do this. And I think now, like, being able to say, hey, we value these people. We've changed the name that we've given them because we're nothing without them, right? And I feel like as new folks come into the industry, it's important for them to feel like they're a part. And that's a great way to even start, is just by saying, hey, we value who you are, so we're going to call you this. What are other ways that we're able to or we're encouraged to value those people, right? You talked about education. We talked about maybe changing the trade partner name. Are there other things that you look to do to make people feel valued on a daily basis?
Sure. One of those things is to recognize them for their performance. And something that, and I'm not great at this, and I'm getting better, this is an evolution for me, is when I'm out on our projects, we see something that's not right. You know, we attack it, we talk about it, we get it fixed and rectified, that's great. And I am super guilty of walking by a Dano that's doing the right thing for the right reasons, the right way, and not saying a word to you. And that's frustrating to me, and something I have to change, because those are the individuals that we need to better reinforce those good behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so we do things like we do helmet giveaways. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about this in a minute, where we award and applaud people for their safe work performances. We do safety lunches on our projects. And it's not a lunch just to have a lunch. It's to help recognize those top safety performers and for our trade partners to know and understand how important this really is. I think, again, there's a shift in the industry that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't want to say we're on the cutting edge of it, but we're right in the meat of it at the right time to help change the industry. And I think that our industry has been lacking for a long time, or the construction industry, as it pertains to technology, equipment, tools, mentality, is substantially behind. Look, these hard hats that we have sitting here, there hasn't been changes in those in 50, 80 years. Mm-hmm. But now we have these incredible pieces of technology that protect our brains. So those are some of the changes that I'm talking about in the industry and what we're doing to help boost that performance with our trade partners. And again, I think times are changing. Generations are changing. Cultures changing. And what we're also seeing from our workforce is they are wanting to do things the right way, mm-hmm. but they may not know exactly what that is. So some of them give it a good college try, and that's where we can really help, you know, get rid of that, hey, it's us versus them. It's all of us together. I remember when I was a carpenter, mm-hmm. I had a superintendent. I mean, he was just chewing on me, mm-hmm. and which is fine. I probably deserved it. Mm-hmm. But I said to him, I said, in order for this operation to be successful, I have to be successful, which means you're successful, which means the other trades are successful, and so on and so forth. That grew. And it was on another job a couple years later, this was in Birmingham, Alabama, where he said, Steve, you know, that stuck with me. Mm. I didn't understand, and this was an old school superintendent. He said, I didn't understand or take into consideration that the success of the people doing the work directly reflects the success of myself and the company. It was, you get it done at all costs, and I don't care about anything else other than you hitting this deadline. And so that was a mentality that I learned from as well. I didn't realize that had an impact. And so my philosophy from that point forward was always going to be the success of everybody will be the collective success of the whole, because mm-hmm. it's not about just that one part.
That's a great way to look at it. And you think about, I want to tie in kind of our lean process to this also, because, you know, for the longest time, construction projects, I think of like building the pyramids, and you think of Pharaoh standing up there with a giant whip, whipping these people as they're trying to pull the Egyptians as they're pulling up the blocks to build the pyramid, right? And it was for him. It's like whatever everybody else, whatever happens to them, right? They were the subs. But, you know, today, like you're saying, it's collective, that everybody gets, everybody needs to participate. Everybody needs to understand the ins and outs to make the job happen the right way, right? We've done that with Lean by bringing in the foreman and the guys that are putting work in place to have a say in our schedule, so we don't have to be Pharaoh and be whipping our trade partners, telling what they have to do, because now we have a great plan to build it. And also they're valued, and they know that they're valued. I love the recognition piece also, right? And that's something we're starting to do on our job, is be able to recognize somebody and give them something with the Flint Co for Life logo on it, whether it's a tape measure, whether it's a hat that says, hey, we appreciate you doing the right thing for the right reason, right? And that makes them want to come back to work the next day and come back and do a good job for you, because whether you like it or not, everybody likes a little pat on the back, or, hey, really, thanks for doing a really good job with that.
Sure, they do. And the life part of Flint Co for Life means live incident-free every day. Mm. And look, we're not looking for perfection. We're looking for progression, continually getting better. And the value that our trade partners add is enormous. Again, we can't do it without them. And I think that there was a time where companies were very selfish. It's all about us. Mm-hmm. And then we're just going to cram it down the trade's throats and make them do whatever. When you talk about Lean, getting into the phase planning meetings and bringing them in where they have buy-in, they have say-so. Mm-hmm. And I think the other critical thing is, I hope that they feel like they can hold us as accountable as we hold them, because mm-hmm. truly we need to do that. Mm-hmm. And if we aren't able to do that, if there's not that dual accountability, again, there's something wrong within our culture, and we need to relook at that.
Yeah, and I think we provide a safe space where people can say, hey, you told me X and now it's Y, right? And then comes a shift, then comes the change where, you know, we're going to pivot this way or that way to make the plan continue to work.
That's right.
So you talked a minute ago, we've got these hard hats, helmets, whatever you would call these here, right? These look a lot different than maybe what I was issued when I got into this business 20-something years ago. Tell us a little bit about what we got up here and maybe why they're on the desk today.
Sure. So within our industry, there's evolution. And I was joking around with some people yesterday. We were talking about the old rotary phones. We're of that age that we know what they are. Well, we don't use those anymore. Mm-mm. We could. My mother-in-law still has one. She's one of seven people in Oklahoma that still has a phone on her wall. But we've advanced to where we have these handheld computers. We call them a phone, but really they do everything. We also talked earlier about the fact that the construction industry in a lot of instances is substantially behind in technologies and methodologies. Well, several years ago, we looked at, like, how do we get better? How do we better protect our people? Hard hats haven't changed in decades. I mean, really the recent changes was going from an aluminum to a plastic, and that was, you know, in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so across the seas, over in Europe, they started using a different type of helmet or a safety helmet instead of the traditional hard hat. And so we started to look at that. How can we better our industry mm-hmm. and better protect the people? Head injuries are a very real thing on our projects. And most people think of somebody falling or something falling from overhead, hitting them. And yeah, that's it too. But really one of the more common ones is somebody slipping and tripping and falling. Mm. And a traditional hard hat, it's going to shoot right off your head, especially if you have a big melon like you do, where that hard hat can't get cinched down really
Thanks
well.
Thanks for noticing.
Well, it's obvious. And so we thought, what are some better solutions? What are the things that we can do? So back in 2017 really, and then in 2018, we looked at safety helmets. And all right, so the first thing is, let's talk about the elephant in the room. They look dumb. I'm not going to wear that on the job site. You'll make it look good.
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
But, you know, people think, you know, really concerned about their looks on a job site. You know, I remember one guy said, I will never wear one of those things. I'm going to look stupid. And I said, you trying to get a date? You know, what? You know, and trying to add some levity to the room to help talk about it. But, and people thought, well, they're going to be a lot hotter. They're not as comfortable, this, that, and the other. It was all the things that because of the unknown. And look, again, construction industry, if there's something that's unknown, we don't want to touch it.
Right.
So we decided as a company that we're going to give it a try. When we first started, nothing was mandated. It wasn't, Dano, you have to wear this. It was a suggestion. Going back to, hey, let's see if we can get people's buy-in. So we issued all the HSE staff got helmets. And our opinions mattered. You know, they wanted to know what we thought of the feel, the weight, the, you know, those types of things. And you know, I always thought growing up playing sports, I played hockey, and I always thought I hated hard hats. Always hated them. Mm-hmm. I always felt top heavy. I have a smaller head, unlike you, but I also had fitment issues. Okay. You know, hard hat would always fall off, and I always thought if I had something similar to my hockey helmet, man, that would just be great. But there was nothing. And then we were introduced to the helmet, and I put it on, and I was like, "This is what I've been waiting for." Mm-hmm. Yeah, I look dumb. And I think that I think that people are going to be a little upset because my hard hat was a badge with all my stickers on it from you know, years and years of work. And so I thought, if I give this a try, my traditional hard hat's going to go on the wall and be like a trophy. Mm-hmm. Eventually it went in the garbage because I was like, I'll never go back. So what we did was we introduced these to our staff and we talked to them about it. And the way these fit down over your head, mm-hmm. not sitting on top, offers mm-hmm. substantially better impact protection, side, back, top, front. Wonderful. And again, the comfort for me, these, in my opinion, were no hotter. We did some testing with some thermometers. They're vented. And the other important thing that a lot of people overlook is this integrated chin strap. And we had some complaints with this as well. Oh, it bothers my beard, or I don't like the way it feels. And I understand that. I get it. It's something that you have to get used to. Once you get used to it, it's a non-issue. So for Flint Co., you know, the chin strap's required, and that completes the system. If you don't have the chin strap buckled, it doesn't do the work it's supposed to do. So as our HSE staff started wearing them, other people started asking about them, and we started giving them away. And again, it was not mandated at the time. It was completely voluntary. And within about a year and a half, I would say about 85-90% of all of our employees were wearing them, which was great. We still had some holdouts, and that's to be expected. And that gives us an opportunity to teach mm-hmm. and to help bring people on. Well, here's something that was really cool. One day I remember I was in Memphis, Tennessee. And Memphis, our Memphis group, they adopted the helmets, I mean, right away. No issues with it. And everybody was 100% on board. Not mandatory, but we're all going to do it. Well, we started offering company-wide for our top performer safety performance with our trade partners. Dano, you're doing a great job. We want to gift you one of these helmets. Mm. And we would give it away. We've given away just under 700 of these in the last couple of years.
Wow.
Here you go, free.
That's a commitment.
It is. It's a big commitment, not only from a monetary standpoint and a cultural standpoint, but us saying, look, we care about you. We recognize what you're doing. Thank you. Here's something to help better protect you. And we also had some people that maybe were not performing very well at all. And we would say, we're going to give you a helmet. We care enough about you that we're going to put this investment with you. Look, these aren't our employees. These are our trade partner employees. But I was driving to Memphis And I would look over, and it was Memphis Light and Gas.
Mm-hmm.
No traditional hard hats. All helmets.
Really?
Department of Transportation for Memphis. No traditional hard hats. Safety helmets.
Wow.
And then we started having more and more trade partners coming on board. We didn't ask them. We didn't talk to them about it. They just started showing up with them. And the consensus was, is they're better. They're offering better protection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just grew and grew from there. So finally, fast forward from 2017, 2018 to December of 2023, that's when we as Flintco said, okay, everybody's wearing this. We're going to go ahead and just make it official and quote unquote mandate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mandate when everybody's already doing it. It's just on the books.
Mm-hmm.
And so in addition to that, we said, our Flintco people are, that's great. We're protected. How do we better help with the trade partners? How do we help better protect them? And so in addition to giving these away, we've went on a campaign going to our trade partners and talking to them about it, showing them the benefits. Starting March of 2024, we'll be requiring the helmet on future projects after that for our trade partners. And what's interesting is, you know, we did the town hall in-house. Okay, let's have it. What are the things you're going to say? They're never going to bid our work and it's going to cost way too much money and all this. Look, these things cost about the same, maybe a little bit more as a traditional hard hat, a good traditional hard hat.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is these have a 10-year service life. Those maybe have a 3.
Mm.
Did you ever replace your old hard hat?
Ooh,
that's
say in 22 years, I have 3 hanging on my wall. So right. I'm definitely outside the...
Right. So we stretch their service life, and which also means that the protection is not as good as it once was because it's been degraded from UV light and general usage. So we've made the switch to these. For Flintco, we use either the Studson, and the Studson also has a full brim version.
Mm-hmm.
They have visors on them. We also utilize the cask as well. There's many different additional things that go on these to make them better. And what's interesting is several of the people that were some of our holdouts at the beginning, they've openly said, I'll never go back to a traditional hard hat. This is the only way to go. And here's the thing, flat out, this is better. This protects better. This is the way to go.
Absolutely. And I wanted to interject a story. I remember when I first got mine in the fall of 2008, and I have a cask that's similar to this and had my little face shield on it. What I love about these is the cask is that they have the face shield built in, right? And I'm not trying to remember where I put my safety glasses or I slid them in my vest and now they're all scratched up, right? This just slides up out of the way, slides down. And I remember I was walking out of a parking garage onto District Cooling Plant 3, and as I'm walking into the job site, one of the guys is standing there with our utility trade partner, and where did you park your helicopter? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just laughed, and I said, hey, look, man, let me tell you a little bit about this, right? Yeah, you say it's helicopter, and I do look like a helicopter pilot, right? But, yeah, Gary, I'm really not trying to go out with you tonight or this weekend, right? I'm not looking for a date. And once I started showing him, he was kind of the old school mentality. And he was like, oh my gosh, this thing probably is pretty sweet. Is it heavy? And I was like, let's step outside the gate here when we're not on the construction site and I can let you hold right. it. He put it on, he messed with it, and he really liked it. The other thing that I like about the inside of these is, you know, the support here. It's built more like a bike helmet, right? I remember I had a job in 2014 at Chilling Station 7 where we actually had a recordable accident, where a guy was stripping a pan deck and one of the pans came loose and hit his traditional hard hat and the strap inside is what mm-hmm. actually cut his head, right? That doesn't happen wearing this thing, right? It's got foam inside of it. It's definitely a much better protection than the old nylon or whatever was in the old hard hats. And, that was really the cause. If that guy had been wearing something like this, it probably would have been more of just a, hey, let's go down and get the shade, get you from ibuprofen and make sure you're going to be all right. But
right. We've heard stories. You know, there was a recent one here in Austin, Texas, where one of our government officials, he came to us and he told us, not on one of our projects, that this saved a worker's life. He was gracious enough to help, you know, share some of the information on the incident. He said, if it weren't for this helmet, that individual wouldn't be with us today.
Wow.
You know, get rid of all the stigma from construction. This is about better protecting people. Mm-hmm. And that's what all this is about. And I don't think there's a better product or a better thing in the industry right now, because look, what's between your ears is you only get one shot at that. It's not like a finger where you might injure that and you got several more. Mm-hmm. That's all that you have.
Yep.
And we need to do a good job of protecting them. And you know, OSHA in mid-December of 2023, they announced to the industry that all of their compliance officers are switching to helmets as well. The industry's going this direction. And I was at a very large trade show towards the end of December. You didn't see any traditional hard hats offered in the trade show at all. It's all helmets these days.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's a testament to our construction industry of saying there's a need, we need to fill it, and that need is based around people and their protection.
So we've talked a little bit about the things that have changed over the last 15 years, you know, right? Bringing in JMJ, starting this, you know, the genuine care for your trade partners, really valuing them, you know, how to educate them. We've talked about the hard hat change, right? We've moving from the traditional hard hat to the helmet. What else is Flint Co. doing to keep safety culture kind of on the cutting edge? What's the next thing coming down the line for us?
So one of the things that we've been noticing a trend on is poor planning when it comes to work execution, work tasks. Our incidents that we have, which thankfully they're few and far between on our projects, but they still happen. And one of the normal causal factors is poor planning, ineffective planning. We see a lot of things that happen on our job sites is due to lack of communication or ineffective communication. So I heard about a product a couple years ago and a company. The company's called Factor Lab and the product's called Smart Tagit a couple years ago. And I was introduced to it and I thought, you know, I'll go back to the old school construction. What is this voodoo? This is, you know, a little out there, and I didn't understand it. Kind of kept it in the back pocket. Well, about a year and a half, 2 years later, two people from two different parts of the country came to me the same day and said, Steve, you need to look at this. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, there's something to this. So I did, and my eyes were really opened. Mm-hmm. And this isn't the one thing I want to make sure that we understand is that when I talk about Smart Tagit and our use of pre-task planning, it's not about the technology. There is a technology component there that's important, mm-hmm. but this is about having genuine, authentic pre-planning conversations and engaging our workforce. So what we would normally see is we would see a paper pre-task plan mm-hmm. with a bunch of check boxes, and people just go there and check the box and shove it over to the superintendent, and all was well. They pencil whipped it. Mm-hmm. Not only that, the superintendent or whomever, it's just, you just see a big stack of paper. Well, nobody's looking at that paper, so why is that individual going to put forth any effort in planning? Nobody's looking at it. We also knew that there was a language barrier. Mm-hmm. We had the foreman that would fill out the pre-task plan and a workforce that didn't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately for the workforce, the men and women that are breaking their backs, they didn't know what it said. They didn't know what they were signing.
Right.
It was ineffective across the board. So as I started to learn about Factor Lab, the company, Barry Nelson, the founder of it. Barry actually will admit he started a different program that we used here in Austin for a long time that actually helped teach us to pencil whip things. And he's like, I've done the wrong thing in the industry, which caused him to rethink things. And Barry's a thought leader and a phenomenal individual. And so he introduced us to the simple way of putting it, it's video-based pre-task planning.
Okay.
But it's so much more than that. What it is it's the opportunity to have your voice heard and listened to, where you can see and understand the culture within your company. You can't necessarily see that on a piece of paper.
No.
But a discussion that you and I are having, others can hear from the content, the context, the passion, and the genuine conversation, what that culture is, what the true care and concern is, what are the hazards, what are the things that we're trying to accomplish today. Mm-hmm. and it captures it on a video. Well, you can do that on any phone. You can just video it. The magic then happens with the technology that's in the background that helps to dissect the language, and it helps us to understand where our culture is. So we set out with this. We wanted to know a couple things. We wanted to know what is it that our field leaders are talking about, and how does that match with our culture, and how does our ethos fit into that? How do we recognize those field leaders and help them continue to get better and to grow stronger? And really, it's about the, and I'm stealing this from Barry, it's about the soil, not the seed. And shame on me, for a long time I was so focused on the seed, I didn't nurture the soil around it. And that's really what we have to focus on. So the technology captures that. It allows us to utilize AI and dashboarding to see real time. So I'll just give you a quick example.
Please.
We had a crew that was using SmartTaget to do their pre-task planning, and it was in a different state. Mm-hmm. Well, as I viewed their pre-task plan, and this was in, you know, late July, every day is over 100 degrees. Mm-hmm. I called the superintendent and said, "Hey, what's one of the things you're struggling with?" He's like, "It's so hot, incredibly hot." I was like, "Well, you're not talking about that on your pre-task plan." He goes, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, let's take a look at it." And he goes, "You know what? I never thought about that." And not only did he go back and he started talking about it, but he talked about it from a genuine, "Hey, I want to make sure that you're getting enough water, rest, shade, the things that you need, the electrolytes that you need to be able to continue to work." And again, he knows his workforce. "You got soccer games this weekend with your kids. Mm-hmm. We want you to be there,
yeah,
not in the hospital." So anyway, it allowed us a window of opportunity, because I firmly believe that when work crews are shaken out in the morning, they're at the gang box, they're drinking coffee, they're telling each other dirty jokes and talking about all the things that go on, that's where that planning's happening. Mm-hmm. And then when you put a piece of paper in front of them, they're like, they just get deflated. Like, yeah, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And so our goal, one of our goals was to reduce pre-task planning by 90%, all this written information, all this stuff on there. And as soon as I heard that, I said to Barry, I said, "Well, we got to get this information." And he just kind of put a timeout up in front of me and said, "Hey, look, you're not getting the information anyway. What makes you think asking more questions is going to get you there?"
Right.
You have to ask the right questions. Mm. And so, again, another epiphany, and look, I'm not the smartest person, but I'm smart enough to know that I need to take the lead from somebody who is really passionate about this and somebody who knows and understands human behavior more than I do. And so we broke it down into four simple questions, and I'm just going to paraphrase, but what are your work tasks for today? Mm-hmm. What are your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? What are the risks associated with those goals? Do you need any permits, you know, to accomplish those goals? What do you need from your supervision? It's things like that get people talking. And so the next part of it is, how do we boost engagement? And I would tell you that whenever pre-task plans are being done from a paper version, the engagement's little to none.
Yeah, very little.
Okay. Well, right now we have the analytics to show us, and I looked at this just yesterday, our engagement has gone up in a month and a half's time, 90%.
Wow.
So that's 90% more people are talking about what they're doing, having the buy-in, like we talked about with our Flint Co. for Life culture, not mm-hmm. forcing, but educating, not mandating, but helping people choose the better thing. If you can raise that engagement and get everybody involved that's doing the task, involved in the planning and the buy-in, the success rate is substantially better. Now, we've been doing this since July with all of the individuals and work crews that have been utilizing SmartTaget. We have had zero first aids, zero recordables, zero lost times, zero near misses. And I would say that some of the feedback, and we don't have a way to quantify this right now, would tell you that the work is getting done faster, and the work is getting done with better quality. And I would take all that back to having genuine pre-planning discussions with the work crews, the people that are doing it. The other thing is the language barrier. One of the beautiful aspects of utilizing this is it translates almost real time. So if you are doing your pre-task plan in Spanish, and I don't speak Spanish, I can go to your pre-task plan, I can see the video, I can hit translation or see transcript, mm-hmm. and it brings up everything in English. It's not 100% perfect because a lot of it is slang language that's used, and the AI is still learning that. Mm-hmm. But it allows us an opportunity to know what our hardworking crews that don't speak English are doing. Mm-hmm. And it also allows us to give feedback back and forth. It allows us to look at it and say, hey, you forgot about this. Did you think about that? Or, hey, great job with this. Let's continue to build upon that. It helps build field leaders. And in our industry, we don't have that a lot. And this is one way that I feel very confident that we are going to be able to build our field leadership that's critical. And so there's 20, 30 years of untangling what we've done in this industry.
Yeah.
And trying to explain it in a few minutes is difficult, but it's not as simple as just turn it on and go. You have to learn how to use it. You have to learn not how the system works, but you have to learn how people work, mm-hmm. how communication works, how conversation works, how asking questions, receiving feedback, and giving feedback, how those things continue to improve. It's very complex, and it's extraordinarily, for me, it's very interesting. It's not as simple as a lot of people, you know, we want plug and play.
Yeah.
This isn't plug and play, and it's certainly not perfect, but I feel that this is something that can help revolutionize. I'm not talking about Flint Co. Flint Co is one thing. We have industry issues, and I feel strongly that this can help beneficially improve our industry and better protect our workforce across the board. There is a lot of work to be done with this. Mm-hmm. We are on the leading edge of it within our company. But the feedback that I've gotten from the individuals that are using it is extraordinarily positive. Most of them, just like I said, I don't want to go back to a traditional hard hat. They don't want to go back to traditional pre-task planning. If they were doing it correctly or thoroughly, it mm-hmm. would take them 45 minutes. It would take our supervision about the same length of time to review those pre-task plans. So by reducing our pre-task planning by 90%, really now it should be 3 to 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Imagine having an 8-hour workday where you have 7 hours and 55 minutes of impactful work happening, not, you know, 6.5 or 7 hours after this pre-task planning, you know, stuff was pencil whipped. Mm-hmm. And so this is substantially more efficient. One of our friends here in Austin, Mateo, mm-hmm. and when I was the superintendent at Flint Co., Mateo and I worked together, mm-hmm. fantastic carpenter. You know, yesterday I saw him out on one of our projects, and he said, I don't want to do anything. I don't want to plan any different. This is the best way that we've ever planned. Thank you for helping to bring this to us.
Wow.
It was like, thank you, Mateo, for being willing and open to try something different and to notice the benefits of it. And look, we're open to critiques as well. Like I said, it's not perfect. This is so much better.
So the way I remember PTPs working, right, is your foreman gets there, you know, work starts at 7 o'clock, so the foreman is generally sitting in the job trailer at 6:30, 6:35 with 3 or 4 pieces of paper in front of him with a pen, writing out his task for the day, checking the boxes, writing some more, what are the hazards, writing some more. Goes outside for stretch and flex, comes back in, takes his PTP, pins it on the wall, right? And nobody knows if he read the hazards to his crew. Nobody right. knows if he's actually got the right hazards. And, you know, Juan Martinez is one of the guys that worked for me that comes back, and I remember him standing in front of the PTP board or JAJ board. You know, it's had different names. And Juan's sitting there for, you know, 45 minutes or an hour looking at 17 different trade partners who've pinned their thing up there and reading it and trying to see if what they've even documented is even right, trying to remember enough about each one so when he walks in the field, he can see what they're actually doing, if the hazards are exactly what they wrote down. What is different about Smart Tagit, right? It's obviously digital. Can you tell me just a little bit about what it looks like compared to that process?
Sure. So you're eliminating that paper. Excuse me. I am not aware of any paper that helped save a life. Right. And this is an evolution. It was good while we had it, but there's better. Mm-hmm. And so what this, again, gives you the opportunity to do is to engage the workforce. That's really one of the core ideals behind it, is engaging the workforce, not dictating to them,
yep,
especially from somebody who's not actually doing the work. Let's, foreman, go over there. Let's talk to the people that are really doing the work. Mm-hmm. As it shows up on your digital device, phone, tablet, computer, the interface, the user interface, is very user friendly, mm-hmm, and it's almost like a social media feed for your project.
Oh wow!
And so you can go in there and you can watch the pre-task planning video. Mm-hmm. You can like it. You can make comments on it. Offer feedback, positive or coaching opportunities. And you can do that from wherever. There, as long as you are within a halfway decent cell service, mm-hmm, it uploads, you know, quickly, mm-hmm, to it. And it gives you the opportunity to also share that throughout, like when the electricians, when their work is going to impact the fire suppression company,
right,
or whomever it may be, they can view each other's pre-task plans. Nobody goes to that board and looks at it,
right,
in reality.
No.
And look, I also want to make sure that this isn't a fix-all, and you still have to do something. It's not automatic. Mm-hmm. You still have to interact with it. You still have to review the pre-task planning conversations and offer feedback and offer constructive criticism. This is just a much more efficient, thorough way of doing it. And on the back end, where the technology, again, the analytics, it tells us what our people are talking about. Mm-hmm. And we have put together a criteria of things that are important to us, and we can measure those things now. But the magic to it is we can measure it with 100% accuracy. Mm-hmm. We're not guessing at it. Mm-hmm. And that gives us the opportunity to be able to accurately, effectively coach and reinforce those behaviors that we see. Again, we're really excited with this. Our HSE staff, we have a focused boot camp coming up in a few weeks.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
And it is all about this, how we teach it, how we educate our staff, how we educate our trade partners. The trade partners that we've shown this to are very excited about it, very excited about the opportunity that it adds for efficiency and effectiveness. We also have many trade partners that are already using this on their own, mm-hmm, outside of Flint Co. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's not a cure-all, but it is an answer to what does better look like and an evolution of better. This is where we're going, and it is substantial what we're seeing.
What's the time frame to roll out for our trade partners on our jobs right now?
So that's a good question that I don't have an exact answer to. We are starting introductions in Q1 of 2024.
Okay.
Part of that challenge is their companies, we need to make sure that their companies are educated with it. We don't, again, it's not just a turn on and use. It's a education, and this is how we're using it. This is how you can more effectively plan. And one of the differences is there are some things that are important to our trade partners that might be different than what's important to us. And they need to make it their own. So it's going to be a slower rollout for our trade partners, but I would say our main focus for trade partners, especially by the second quarter of this year, is to have one key trade partner in each area, mm-hmm, utilizing SmartTaget to perform their pre-task planning. We also want feedback from them to say, hey, this is working or this isn't working, or what's good and what's not good, so we can evolve with them, because, again, we're partners together. That's how we're going to get better together.
So if you're a trade partner working in one of Flintco's area offices and you're interested in SmartTaget, let us know, right? We're gonna want some feedback. We're going to want some critiques. We're going to want to make sure that you can take advantage of it, that you can work on building leaders on your team by using this program.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Steve, is there anything else on the horizon we need to be looking out for, or are we right in line?
Well, I say we're always advancing. We're always looking for opportunities to get better. We encourage people to bring new things to us. They don't have to be revolutionary, but if there are things that we can do better, we need to know about it. We want to know about it so we can investigate and help put those things into play. And again, really our focus is better protection, whether it's helmets, whether it's pre-task planning, genuine care and concern for each other. We're all in this together. America's growing, and we're the ones that are going to be there to help put it together, and it takes a team, not just one person. So appreciate your time, Dano.
Steve, it's been great having you on Flintco Talks today. It's been enlightening for me, hopefully for those that hear it, and appreciate everything you do for us and our great company.
You too, Dano. Thanks.